Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by Kenneth Doust. This week, part two of the beauty industry expose, The Illusionists. So, drop those eyebrow tweezers and please stay tuned. Today, our second and final installment of the film The Illusionists, written, directed, and produced by Elena Rossini. It's about the damage done by the hugely profitable so-called beauty industry. This documentary is international in scope, and it focuses on men as well as on women. All good. In part one last week, we looked at how the industry deliberately makes people insecure, and how it promotes an extremely narrow image of female beauty worldwide. Always pale skin, long legs, and skinny. This week, the film looks more at skinniness, and also at computer-retouched images of female beauty, at the image of male beauty they're selling, at the sexualization of children, at the connections between the beauty industry and the porn industry, and at how to fight back. So put down that bottle of Slim Fast, take off those high heels, chuck that Brazilian bikini wax into the trash can, and enjoy part two of The Illusionists.
The weight loss industry could be defined as the capitalist success story of the 20th century, as no other business with a 98% failure rate could earn as much, $586 billion a year worldwide. Similarly to the anti-aging business, the weight loss industry would have modest earnings if people succeeded in losing weight and keeping it off. Most people who diet do so in cycles, dieting over and over again in the hope of achieving a slimmer figure. And contradictory messages allow for nearly infinite growth and expansion.
A collage of TV ads shows sensuous images of high-calorie food products. Women are eating this junk food with expressions of rapture and bliss, and also images of weight loss products and girdles. Excuse me, shapewear.
It's a little-known fact that the multinational Unilever, the same company that owns Dove and Fair and Lovely Skin Whitening Cream, had a curious acquisition spree in April 2000. Unilever purchased the ice cream brand Ben & Jerry's and the weight loss drink Slim Fast on the same day. Prudential Securities analyst John McMillan commented in the Wall Street Journal, "The fact that one product makes you fat and one makes you thin is funny, but they didn't say boo to address that." In some ways, corporations don't care if you're skinny or overweight. They make money as long as the bar of what is considered attractive is very difficult to reach. Over the years, the size of fashion models has dramatically decreased. Despite this, today even waify models aren't thin enough for advertisers. Digitally retouching models in order to make them appear thinner is standard practice.
Jean Kilbourne.
Recently, Ralph Lauren ran an ad in which the model had been photoshopped to have an impossible body. Her head was actually bigger than her pelvis. The actual model, who was 5'10 and weighed 115 pounds, was fired for being too fat, and they used Photoshop to make this grotesque image. And I'm sure we're going to see more and more of that. The human body just cannot get any thinner. The models can't get any thinner than they are, but they can use Photoshop to make a thinner and thinner image.
And when models are too skinny, protruding bones are routinely airbrushed out. Because these images of unattainable bodies are everywhere, they reach not only those who are overweight, but also people who don't need to diet, with dangerous consequences. For centuries, Japan and neighboring Asian countries valued diverse body types. A curvy female body symbolized wealth and fertility. But things changed starting in the 1980s. A dramatic increase in eating disorders swept across the region. According to a study conducted by Dr. Tetsuya Ando at the National Institute of Mental Health, about 30% of Japanese women in their 20s are categorized as underweight. Whereas obesity is increasing amongst men, women's average body mass index is decreasing year after year.
Many young women think their bodies are oversized, even if they are underweight. That's surprising.
Researcher Jason Carlin.
I think one of the things that you see in the Japanese media, which is also present, in fact, in other places as well, is that there's a kind of a gap between what men and women perceive as ideals of beauty. For example, those that do appeal to a male audience, those that are often the idols that you hear about in Japanese media culture, tend to have a kind of aesthetic to them that is not like the aesthetic that you would associate with Western models. They tend to be shorter in stature. They tend to have characteristics of femininity that are almost, in some sense, the opposite of what we would associate with the long-legged models in the West. And in part, the explanation for this has always been that traditionally, the male audience within Japan of young adolescent men are attracted to images of women who are more accessible, more attainable. On the other hand, Japanese women go to the opposite extreme of trying to cultivate that body image that they see in women's magazines, which are women's bodies that are very thin, with very long legs, and with many of the characteristics that we associate with this kind of global culture of beauty that is circulating throughout the world.
Mumbai, India.
I grew up watching movies in the 70s and the 80s where actresses like Rekha or Rakhi or Hema Malini, you know, the nice hourglass figures, you know, padded, sort of more what I call traditional looking, embodying a certain image that was close to home, what home was then, pre-globalization. Now what we're seeing is a trend towards an imitation of the westernized body image. These girls literally are fighting for the size zero, which was never known as beautiful in India.
Part 3, Brave New World.
Around the world, the market for men's grooming products has seen an explosive growth in the last few years. There's a new war being waged against men's body hair.
Manscaping. It's the act of tweezing, waxing, dissolving, and shaving unwanted hair from all parts of your body. In fact, these days, many men are choosing to do away with practically every bit of hair as part of their regular men's grooming routine. Yes, that includes the nether regions.
Taking care of the hair down there certainly has its benefits. You might say when there's no underbrush, the tree looks taller.
Start at the hairline and shave to the base using single strokes. Shave in the direction of the hair initially to remove as much as you can.
I wouldn't date a guy who had a grooming problem, so no. Boop.
The trend for hairlessness may have started in pornography, an industry that is exponentially larger and more profitable than the mainstream film business.
The Triple X Factor. Boston. Professor Gail Dines.
So let's talk about the size of this industry. Now, really accurate statistics are hard to come by. Generally speaking, they say that pornography is about a $12 billion a year industry, which is bigger than the mainstream film industry in America. Worldwide, they reckon it's $97 billion.
A clip from Perversion for Profit, 1965.
Hello there. I'm George Putnam. I'd like to begin with a fact, a simple yet shocking fact. It is this. A flood tide of filth is engulfing our country in the form of newsstand obscenity and is threatening to pervert an entire generation of our American children. A major factor that makes youngsters prime targets for this printed filth is the natural curiosity of youth about the mysterious force of sex.
You live in a society absolutely awash with porn images. Softcore porn images from Victoria's Secrets to Maxim to music videos. Let me ask you a question. Would you all agree that the food industry shapes the way you eat? Would you agree that the clothes industry shapes the way you dress? So would you not say the sex industry shapes the way we have sex? How could this be the only industry that has no effect in the world? You cannot make sense of media images of women today without starting your analysis of pornography. Everywhere you look, MTV, movies, video games, everywhere you go, you see images that really 15 years ago you would have found in mainstream pornography. And this is the process that has happened, the mainstreaming of pornography now in pop culture.
A collage of erotic and very suggestive images from popular culture, especially advertising.
Pornography has a very specific idealized image of women. Thin, toned, big-breasted, and above all, hairless. And when you think of young boys and young men getting their first introduction to sex via pornography, they become kind of accustomed to seeing women with absolutely no body hair. And what I have found in my interviews, very interestingly, is that a lot of boys and men are really disgusted by women's pubic hair because they're just not used to it. And in some cases, I've even heard from my students that their boyfriends refuse to have sex with them if they've got body hair. And this could have very severe consequences when you are bringing up a generation of men who really are disgusted by what looks like an adult woman.
Get ready to weigh in, get ready to take sides, because some parents are going to argue to you that it's just fine for little girls to get luxurious spa treatments, and we're not just talking manicures here, we're talking about bikini waxes.
Well, because I've been brought up in a porn culture, I feel like body image is focused on a lot, and growing up I always had that trouble, like I have to match up to these expectations. But why? They're not my expectations, but they're what society made us think that is okay.
The mainstreaming of pornography into popular culture has had profound consequences in the ways young girls are portrayed in the media.
A televised beauty pageant for toddlers. A girl contestant, maybe 3 years old, breaks out into an erotic bump and grind.
Now, this is something you are seeing across the media. You are seeing younger and younger girls made to look like women. And this can have incredible implications and consequences for young girls.
Oh, I know what this look needs. My little rhinestone-studded butterfly barrette. It's right here in my closet.
It's not a closet. That's a planet called fashion.
Getting them young. Activist Susan Lin.
Oh, there's a kind of marketing that's called aspirational marketing. And that's another example of how children's just normal developmental evolution is exploited. It's perfectly normal for little kids to want to be like older kids.
I made $50,000 in the stock market today.
I had twins.
I went to the poor farm.
I'm on Millionaire Acres.
That's life.
The game of life.
And the marketing industry got the bright idea of saying, well, if preschool girls want to be like teenagers, let's market to them as if they were teenagers. And it began with Barbie.
Barbie, you're beautiful. You make me feel my Barbie doll is really real.
Whose fashionista are you?
Are you a girly girl or an artsy girl? Cutie girl or a sassy girl? Are you a wild or glam girl?
You can collect all six.
Barbie girl.
Virtually every classic toy has followed the trend, undergoing a radical transformation.
Welcome to the world of strawberry shortcake.
Strawberry shortcake, putting on the glitz, featuring glittering nails, glamorous hair,
wow!
Fabulous fashion, and fun.
Lego is here. Hey, kids, look. A whole new world to build.
New Lego Friends. Welcome to beautiful Heart Lake City. Time to chill with the girls.
At the beauty shop, Emma is styled and ready to go.
This is going to be so much fun.
We began to see makeup marketed to ever younger girls. Now, you know, there's lingerie for four-year-olds. As preschool girls and their parents are told that they don't want baby dolls and they don't want to look like little girls, they want to look like teenagers, that becomes the norm in the market.
I think that the sexualization of children is not so much about sex, it's really about consuming. That the real point is to turn these children into consumers at a very young age. If you can eroticize shopping in childhood, then you will get these people lined up at the malls for the rest of their lives. What they're doing is they're conditioning girls at incredibly young ages to feel that how they look is what's most important about them, that their lovability depends on their sex appeal, and that they can buy this look and this sex appeal if they just choose the right products and try hard enough.
Boys are not immune to stereotypes and are also heavily targeted by the advertising industry and mass media, but with very different messages.
Here we have the original G.I. Joe from 1964. And I'm afraid that my copy here has lost a couple of his limbs because I have shown him at various conferences around the world. But as you can see, 1964 G.I. Joe, if he were my height or were the size of an average man, would be a perfectly normal looking man. He has no large biceps or chest muscles or any particular muscularity. But now, let's take a look at G.I. Joe 10 years later from 1975. And as you can see now, G.I. Joe has started to spend a bit of time in the gym. And then, by 1992, we see that G.I. Joe has not only been spending quite a lot of time in the gym, but maybe even has taken a touch of anabolic steroids here and there. So this is sort of a graphic illustration of this evolution of focus on muscularity just over the span of a few decades.
Video games and virtual worlds are impacting both boys and girls. Nowhere is this more evident than in Japan, where the virtual and the real often overlap.
Future bodies. Tokyo. Why are big eyes so popular in Japan? It's because the lead characters in anime and manga always have big eyes. Growing up, Japanese girls and boys see so many of these images, and so they believe that having big eyes equals happiness and success.
The story of AKB48 is emblematic of what the future may have in store for us. AKB48 is the most famous music group in Japan, with over 80 members, all girls, ranging in age from 13 to mid-20s. Their concerts, music videos, and product endorsements have made them one of the highest-earning musical acts in the world. Their members are everywhere. They are constantly talked about, their every media appearance carefully dissected by fans. So when a never-before-seen girl starred in a high-profile commercial for the candy company Glico, discussions about her set the media and blogosphere on fire.
When Eguchi Aimee first appeared in her commercial, this was without any type of announcement from the production company. For many fans, there was a moment of disbelief. Was this a new member of this idol group that we had never seen before? Was this a new member who was going to be promoted at the front? Because she was featured prominently in this advertisement in the center.
Eguchi Aimee even appeared on the cover of the Japanese magazine Weekly Playboy, which referred to her as the ultimate love bomb. Fans of the group were in disbelief. Never before had they witnessed such an astronomic rise from obscurity to fame. Something didn't sit right.
And it was only later, and in part through the detective work of the fans themselves, that they came to the conclusion that she was most likely a kind of a digital composite of the various members of the idol group itself. Finally, of course, the production company did reveal that Eguchi Aimee was, in fact, a component of the leading members of this idol group, AKB48. The virtual idol here represents something that is beyond life and death. It becomes an object of timeless beauty and pleasure.
This may very well be one of the first moments in human history when the line between real and virtual has been successfully blurred.
We're going to see real models replaced by these virtual bodies that will be created by computer. So this then will become the image against which real women and girls will be comparing themselves.
If tomorrow women all over the world looked in the mirror and if they liked what they saw reflected back at them, then we would have to reshape capitalism as we know it. Because how many industries survive on the fact that women are incredibly self-loathing, which of course did not come from nowhere. It came from the media, which is also tied into many of these industries. If you take away that self-loathing that women have, then you will see industries all over the globe go bankrupt. So what I really think young women need to understand is that you are being exploited and you are being manipulated and you are being seduced into hating yourself as a way to generate astronomical profits that keep a very few very wealthy.
Agents of change.
At stake here, in terms of who controls the media, is what kind of a society we want to live in. The question becomes, do you want to live in a society that is owned and controlled by a handful of corporations who determine the nature of our visual landscape? Do you want a handful of corporations to determine what femininity should look like, what masculinity should look like, what sexuality should look like? Or do you think that we, as people, should have a right to determine our own cultural images, that we should have a right to decide what kind of culture we live in, and especially what kind of culture our children grow up in? I think that's our basic human right. It is not a right of the corporations.
Ladies and gentlemen, the distinguished author, Mr. Aldous Huxley.
Brave New World is a study of the future as it may be, unless we are extremely careful. It depicts a society in which man has replaced nature by science, morality by drugs, individuality by total conformity. It is a hideous prospect, yet we seem determined to follow this path of self-destruction. But Brave New World need not be our future. The choice, after all, is always in our own hands.
And our own hands have never been this powerful. Throughout the entire history of mankind, public discourse was tightly controlled by a small caste of wealthy individuals. All this changed in the 1990s with the advent of the internet. Today, an individual with a device connected to the internet can spark a revolution. A blogger can be heard as loud and clear as the CEO of a Fortune 500 company.
A 14-year-old is getting credit for inciting change in one of the biggest teen magazines in the industry.
17 magazine promises to get real about beauty after an outcry in May. Julia Bloom, she organized an online petition asking for one unaltered photo spread per month.
Disney is said to be retreating now from its Princess Merida makeover.
Sisters Lexi and Lindsay Kite are on a mission to help girls take back their beauty, and they are countering cosmetic surgery billboards with billboards of their own. They're also speaking across the country, telling girls and their parents to reject all messages that make girls believe their bodies are not good enough.
Across the world, there are almost 3 billion people with an internet connection. 70% of them are online every day. 8 new people start using the internet every second. And there are more than 130,000 new websites created every single day. This has the potential to be an almighty digital army that could be mobilized for change, challenging the status quo, creating healthy media, taking on powerful corporations that profit from our insecurities. I could tell you that we're capable of anything, that we can start a sea change, but it won't be the whole truth. We're in for a fierce, long, challenging battle. The other side has almost endless money and resources at their disposal. It's not going to be easy, but it's definitely going to be worth it.
And the film ends with some text urging you to boycott companies that promote negative body images. Take a break from the mainstream media. Stop obsessing about your looks. And remember the quote from Will Rogers: advertising is the art of convincing people to spend money they don't have for something they don't need. The Illusionists was written, directed, and produced by Elena Rossini and narrated by Peter Coyote. Find more at illusionists.org and more from us at newworldnotes.blogspot.com. From Darkest Connecticut, this is Kenneth Doust, thanking you for listening, advising illegitimi non carborundum, and hoping you'll tune in again next week. Power to the people!